So, it's a pleasure to have Mike Schneider speaking today. Mike is visiting for the semester in the economics department at Stanford, and he is normally at the Center of Economic Research in Zurich. He works on economic growth and public economics and economic demography and political economy. And today he has a particularly difficult task because I don't know, but I'm just guessing that you're used to talking in Greek notation.
In part.
And I warned Mike that we are not, we don't speak Greek for the most part, but, and that you're going to have to make it understandable by demographers and sociologists and few in common.
Yeah.
So, okay. A pleasure to have you, and we're looking forward to hearing.
Thanks. Yeah, so I tried to avoid Greek in my talk, so it's going to be standard English, I hope. And yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks a lot for inviting me. It's going to be a great opportunity at this point, actually, to present this paper, because we're thinking of revising it a bit. In the near future, and I'm really looking forward to your comments and what you think about it, coming from a bit different perspective, Ron told me, or has said, not from the Greek, but the English perspective, or American perspective. And I'm kind of like, in most of my part, a Greek guy, but it's great to just to see what you say to it, and I'm sure we will benefit a lot from your comments in our revision, and also certainly you'll point at things that'll be interesting for future research. So this is a paper on growth and welfare where people in a sense can influence their lifetime by investment in healthcare. I wrote it with a friend of mine from the University of Bern, Ralf Winkler. I want to start with some facts that all of you know here. So life expectancies increased considerably in the US, but elsewhere in the world as well. And health expenditures also risen. There's no clear causal link established as far as I know, but many think that there is some connection between the two, and this will be a crucial assumption that we also make in this talk. So the question would be, well, what are the welfare effects of all this? So Becker et al. In their AER paper 2005 say, okay, that's 12% of the total welfare increase in the US between 1960 and 2000. Would be due to this increase in longevity. And there are other papers like Murphy, Topol, and so on that try to estimate willingness to pay for lifetime increases. And that's a great literature, very interesting. What they typically, or all of them basically, don't have in there is any macro repercussion. So there's another literature that like centers on the growth effects or macro effects of these longevity increases, and the results there, whether or not longevity has increased economic growth, pretty much depends on the particular model that we use, and central issues there with retirement age, how is that influenced? Dependency ratios and so on, but then also, I mean, the growth effects should typically feed back into welfare as well, right? So there is we haven't found any really great connection between these two different perspectives, and what we wanted to do here in this paper is just get a connection between these two literatures here, and we approach this as a essentially from a, say, that perspective, we want to build a simple model that, that kind of brings these two things together in one model. And we're taking, certainly, a very simple growth model for that, and a very simple household side, where households can decide how much to spend on healthcare services to prolong their life. And then we're going to have these growth effects in there as well. So, and as I said, we want to move forward, keeping it simple first, and we're like excluding a lot of stuff by assumption that you might find relevant, and I'm happy to discuss all that with you, how results change.
Yeah. Is this related to the work by Chad Jones and Robert Hall?
Yeah, that's related to it, exactly. What Chad Jones and Robert Hall do is they're focusing on the welfare channel in the sense that people get richer, and then the elasticity substitution between healthcare and consumption changes in favor of healthcare. So people are spending more and more on healthcare just because they're getting richer. So they don't need any technological improvements to explain healthcare. But on the other hand, there's a lot of literature, and I'm coming to that point actually in a few slides, coming back to that. There's a lot of literature that emphasizes mostly the technological improvements. And we were on this side, actually. And there's a dispute, maybe I'm going to say right away, between, on the one hand, the Hall and Jones, and on the other hand, there's a paper by Acemoglu and co-authors who try to test whether health expenditures have gone up in response to increases in welfare, in wealth. By instrumenting the increase in wealth to oil shocks. So when they were like, they found new oil, got richer, and they didn't find any significant effects on healthcare spending. So the precise question that we basically here address is, we want to build such a model and then ask, okay, what are the effects on growth and welfare of improvements in healthcare. So that is basically what drives our healthcare expenditures in an equilibrium model. Though it's not that that we have them exogenous as it's done sometimes, and then look, okay, well, now there's this great technology and people are all of a sudden living longer, but instead, and that's the point that all the jokes make against the healthcare technology argument, well, if there's a new healthcare technology, I don't have to use it, right? If it's so expensive, well, I might just refrain from it. And here, that's why we think an equilibrium perspective on that is important.
Let's hope that this...
We all went out to go talk to
you. Okay, great.
and we're going to consider two different healthcare improvements here. One is the baseline mortality, so I'm just getting, or my hazard rate of dying is reduced because of new knowledge, say, I know germ theory and wash my hands more, things like that. They're cheap in a sense. And then there's this other part, that's a marginal productivity of my healthcare expenditures, right? So new surgeries, diagnostic tools, and so on, new medication. What do we find? What we want to call our standard model, our standard setup, I'm going to explain exactly what that's going to be. We find a positive effect on growth, which, however, doesn't seem to be too small in the simulations that we have. I'm going to put some numbers to it and see how the effects relate. So welfare here is mostly directly from prolonging life. So we have two effects basically. One is if I'm living longer, I can spread out consumption longer and have a direct welfare effect of that.
Stop for a second. I just want to know about just horrible noise.
And they won't stop, I think.
Yeah, he won't stop. I try to get him home to stop. But he says he has 10 minutes because he wants to get in before the rain, and then it was required. I'm sorry.
Well,
you don't
check out this part.
Can you hear me in the back? It's economic growth. When I speak of growth, and sorry, when I speak of growth, I mean economic growth. Okay. There is, of course, some population growth if people live longer. But here, when it says growth, I mean economic growth.
Can you say in one sense, what's the main connection between this and economic growth?
Between population?
So you're thinking, this is health gains in productive ages. Is it a story that improving death rates at 95 would generate economic growth?
The story is basically how population affects economic growth is through the capital intensity in the economy, capital per capita. So if this dilutes, so we have a capital stock, and the larger, so people say we have a capital stock, and the larger the capital stock is, essentially the higher is will be the growth rate, right? And so if we have more people, then it depends on their saving propensity, essentially, what happens to growth. So,
okay.
I'll come to that point in detail, actually. So, but the welfare effects that are directly from a longer life with just a small growth effect, so they depend strongly on the trend of the healthcare improvement. So if we have, if baseline mortality increases much higher than if the productivity of in the healthcare technology increases. And we're going to see, I'm going to show you some numbers, but I don't want to push them too far, just interpret them with caution, because we really have a simple model here, and I think things should be added to it. Yeah?
I hope you don't mind being interrupted all the time.
No, please interrupt me.
And if you're going to come to this later, then don't talk about it now, but I'm wondering about the welfare effects other through the effect on economic growth, but what you were talking about a moment ago, that we live longer, we then can spread our consumption, say the same amount of consumption, over a longer life, and so we consume less each year that we're actually alive. We have presumably then, if there's diminishing marginal utility consumption, then we're going to have a higher total value, utility value of that consumption over our lives. So that would be one effect, but then the other is we might just like living longer.
Absolutely. I fully agree. We don't have it in the model. Utility from just living longer here, it's really a basic standard household that just is concerned with consumption and has diminishing returns in this utility from consumption and then able to spread it out. One might think, it's certainly an interesting thing to go in and modify the model in this direction. We would probably see higher health spending, I guess, and then may have different repercussions on economic growth, which we can discuss later when we see in the model. That's certainly interesting.
I just wanted to follow on one point, which is to say, not only do we maybe like living longer, but I really like it when my mom lives longer.
Absolutely. Also a very good point, which we don't have in there. Yeah, that's true. I fully agree. So, but there are also, I guess, these would be all things that would be, maybe I'd want to spend for my mom or things that absolutely are should be interesting to, you know. I mean, things get complicated once I my utility depends on others' utility, but and then we're going to ask. Okay, so this is like what we see in the equilibrium, the healthcare expenditures there. Are they optimal or not? And we're going to identify two externalities with respect to healthcare expenditures. One is a well-known, which basically comes from the fact that we include annuities in our model, so people can insure against accidental bequests. So if they die, their wealth is there, so they don't like it because they're not altruistic in our model, so they can insure there. That's the assumption, and insure against this. So then the question is, how we set it up. There's a paper by Becker Philipson who argue that if this market is competitive, then people don't consider their higher lifetimes reducing the return on these annuities. So that's one well-known externality, but we have a different one, and that's original here to this paper, that comes from the growth effect. Since economic growth depends on the aggregate capital stock, and people are saving more when they live longer, then with respect to their savings decision, they just consider their own saving and household budget, but not that they have an effect on the aggregate capital stock, which is an externality. So they don't consider the growth rate. If everyone just invested more in healthcare or lived longer, then and they would consider the effect that this has on their incentives to save and increase the capital stock, then they would take more and had a higher growth rate. Maybe I'll come to that point later.
Is the implication then that you want to have Affordable Care Act? Yeah, so public expenditures on healthcare would increase efficiency in your model.
Yeah, in this case, yeah. I'll discuss it in detail because there is also something that we have to consider here. That is the growth effect in what we call our standard model is always positive, so this would mean underinvestment in a sense, but it might also turn negative when we relax the spillover specification. Spillover means that we have exactly this knowledge spillover or learning by doing or learning by investing spillover that's typical in these growth models. So every growth model that has competitive sectors, competitive production, has some kind of spillover which drives growth, which depends in the standard Romer models on the aggregate capital stock. That will be the case here with us. In other growth models, it's through direct R&D knowledge spillovers. So here we make the point that it is sensitive to the specification of these spillovers. How healthcare expenditures affect growth, and then finally also welfare. And then it may turn around that we may have, with a negative growth effect, healthcare expenditures that are inefficiently run. So maybe just brief to literature. I said already there is this literature on longevity and growth. I just want to mention three papers that also have endogenous expected lifetime in there, as we do, but they have a very different focus and setup. So we're going with a continuous time model versus a two-period overlapping generations framework. Ours is more general in this sense, and also they're not considering any healthcare technology improvements or so, but focusing on here inequality, chaotic dynamics of public interference into private decisions, and finally argues that there is a complementarity between between education and healthcare spend. And then there's this other literature which is concerned with willingness to pay to reduce mortality risk, and probably a lot of people here know that. And the recent literature, Becker et al. And Jones-Kleno, which is concerned with basically some type of augmenting typical GDP welfare measure with other things like longevity, inequality, things like that. I'm going to say something to that at the end as well. So I want to give you, in the next few minutes, a brief look at the model, get a feeling for what we do, then discuss what the effects of improvements of the healthcare technology are, show some simulations on growth and welfare effects that come out of our model, which I say again is certainly a simple one. Then I'm going to discuss the inefficiencies and show the sensitivity with respect to the alternatives below the specification. Finally, I'm going to conclude. So basically, the model just comprises a household sector, just people living there, consuming, and production sectors too. We have consumption goods and healthcare needs to be produced. And healthcare here really only prolongs life. So it might be interesting to put healthcare in the utility, for example, also, but that would be future research. And we have two insurances here. The one is against the accidental bequest, so there are annuities just to abstract from capital market incompleteness. Then we have a healthcare insurance here. That is the way through which households basically buy healthcare. So what we assume is that a household can choose the household can choose to forego a certain percentage or share of the wage into a healthcare insurance and then get a higher longevity for it. That's basically the assumption. So we have a large number of households and they face a constant hazard rate of dying throughout their lifetime, and this hazard rate, and this is the novel point here, is now a function of the healthcare that they buy. So they can forego consumption and for that live longer in expectation. And then at each point in time we have a new cohort and we don't consider fertility choice here. We really want to concentrate on mortality.
So this is mortality of the household. Is it also been like the new cohort? Is it a new cohort of households?
Yeah, basically a household is basically just a single individual. So there is a certain number of individuals born at every point in time, and then a certain share of the people alive are dying, and and it's just a single person, basically, what we call household. So it's not dynasties.
Okay. There's a reason then you don't just call them persons instead of households?
Yeah, because probably used to the Greek language. Typically, an agent, an economic agent maximizes utility, then we call it a household problem. Or, okay. So it's just the better language. Sorry for that. The individual or person just maximizes expected discounted lifetime utility. So we just have a stream of consumption, and then they just maximize it with respect to their savings and healthcare expenditures. And here comes the remark. So this is one of two formulas, I guess. One of two Greek stuff. This is the utility function, and here if we added a constant here, then we would get the Hall and Jones specification. Then we would get this Ralph effect. This one here is the typical one in the growth literature. And the one with the constant is the one that Hall and Jones and some people in the willingness to pay literature for healthcare take. And this, all that does is it excludes these wealth effects. So we people are not spending more on healthcare just because they get richer in this model. And it would be interesting to just extend it in the next step to that as well.
What's the difference between T and S?
Oh, sorry. This is just consumption at time T for a household or an individual born at time S. So, yeah. And that's his utility, instantaneous utility, and then you just have the integral right over the lifetime. And here, V is a concave function, and that's why spreading out consumption more over the lifetime is a good thing. And here, I also have the this is the Atsumoku paper that I told you about, and here Roland Jones, the counterpart of it. So, yeah, households, they just work one unit of labor at each time during their lifetime. They can save and borrow assets at the going rate, and they're born without assets, so there are no bequests. They don't get anything from their parents, if you like. And the person takes the return on annuities as given. So they see a price for the annuities that they get during their lifetimes, and they forego potential bequests to this insurance firm.
There's one unit of labor in each period?
In each period, per person, yeah.
And so they're not saving for retirement here?
Exactly. That is the point that I... that is important here. We don't have a retirement decision in here. So we don't have, we just wanted to keep the simple mechanics of the model and then maybe go to a retirement decision later. I'd like to discuss that a bit later maybe when we see the effects of the model, then we can discuss what it would change. But I think we can work out qualitatively the mechanics as a first step without. So in this, as I wanted to point out, taking this price as given neglects the effect that households have in total, in the aggregate, on the return, because the return is going to be lower because people are living longer, right? So not taking this into account is the one of the externalities. That's well known in the literature. So here's the consumption production. It just takes capital, labor, and a productivity level or technology, if you like, and that depends on capital intensity here. So, and that is the spillover. This is a spillover that depends on how much capital per capita is in the economy. And this is what's going to drive growth. If we hadn't anything like that, we wouldn't have a growth model. One has growth models with just capital and labor, but if we want to have competitive firms, then we every growth model needs a spillover effect, and that's a crucial thing. Okay, and then just we get demand via profit maximization. And the healthcare sector is also relatively simple. It just works by taking out labor from the consumption sector, if you like. So if I buy a unit of healthcare, I essentially buy a doctor, for example. So healthcare is just produced via labor. I think it should be possible to augment it with capital, but for now we have it with labor. And then of course we need in the equilibrium in the labor market equal wage between working in the consumption goods sector or becoming a doctor doing healthcare. And then that's the second Greek here thing. The that is our particular healthcare technology that, that we assume here. So we just want to have a, as a first thing, a linear technology here. This is the baseline mortality that I have, the probability of dying without any healthcare expenditures. This is my healthcare expenditures, how many doctors I employ, basically. And this is a productivity factor, how productive this healthcare is in reducing my mortality rate.
Can you reduce it to zero?
No, that's precluded by assumption, but if we wouldn't have a bound here, yes, then yes. I didn't put the constraint on here to avoid the greed, but
You could reduce it to zero, you could sell this for big money.
That's true. That's right, yeah.
And so does this labor efficiency, does that change over time, or is it just constant?
The psi, yeah, that's going to be our comparative status. What happens if we change it? The labor, the productivity here in the healthcare sector, exactly. And what happens, so suppose a new technology comes, I can do better heart surgery, that would be something that changes the psi upwards. And so, okay, as I said, the household decides on healthcare spending. How much of my wage do I want to forego for healthcare? How much do I want to consume and how much do I want to save, subject to a budget constraint? And then here comes the necessary condition. That's an interesting point. So in the optimum, the marginal reduction in lifetime consumption, so if I forgo some consumption during my lifetime, then the utility that I forgo for that at the margin must be the value that I get by having another period of life in expectation. And that's what we call, or is called in this literature, the quality versus quantity of life trade-off. There's another one with respect to education, the Beckerian, right? So here, I want to forego some quality of life to live longer. And the intuition is, as one already pointed out, that I can alleviate my diminishing returns from consumption at each point in time.
So you're assuming that more life is always like less quality, lower quality life?
Here it is, because I have to invest a bit longer. I mean, in a sense, okay, don't want to push these names too far here. It just means that I have a lower consumption level if I live longer because I have to invest to live longer in expectation. That's all. I mean,
which may be healthier and more successful in the process. So
I agree. I fully agree, and I think that's really something interesting for future research.
Okay.
As I said, it's a simple model. I'm coming from the Greek part.
Okay.
I'm trying to imagine this sort of the individual optimizing decisions over lifetime, including expected length of life. And it seems to me that if there are annuities, as there are here, that is going to lead to overspending on health care.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that right?
That's exactly right. That's what I tried to point it out before. That's the Becker-Phillipson paper. That is, if we have annuities, then we have overspending because they don't consider the repercussion on the return of annuities in the market if they live longer.
Well, what I was thinking is that if you didn't have annuities and you were, at some point you would think, gee, if I live longer, I'm going to have to reduce consumption each year, and, maybe in the specification that never is a problem, but with the annuity, it sort of takes, you can consume, you don't have to reduce consumption each year just because you're spending more on healthcare because the annuity is going to pay you as long as you live.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I mean, if the individuals would take into account that their annuity, let's put it that way. I think, if I understand you correctly, is I'm spending more on health care because there are annuities. I don't have to worry that, my wealth goes away. Is that the
point? Well, sort of, yeah. Compared to a world without more?
Exactly. So annuities. You're comparing, you're not in the world with annuities, arguing, asking, is that optimal with annuities? How much do they buy and so on? So, but the question would be, okay, contrasted with a world without annuities, do they spend more with annuities relative to a world without?
Yeah, exactly.
And I would say so, yes.
Yeah.
Depends both on risk aversion and on discount rate.
Yeah.
For different individuals. If you're a risk taking, you don't mind not having an annuity possibility. And you consume a lot now because the future, especially if you have a high discount rate, doesn't matter. And you're willing to take the risk. But if you're risk averse, like many people are, if you don't do the annuity, you spend on health care now. Other ways, I don't know. You really worry about living too long.
That's right, but under risk aversion, I'd say they spend less. And maybe I can point to work by Antoine Bonnier here. I think it also depends on the risk aversion with respect to the length of life, which is additionally another thing, as he pointed out. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a good point. So, okay, what happens in the production sector now if people spend on healthcare? So, If they spend on healthcare, that means they're buying doctors, so we have less labor in the consumption production. That is a bad thing for the interest rate because capital is not as productive. We have less people working with it. On the other hand, people save more because they live longer. So saving is more valuable. That decreases the interest rate.
So how does saving work in this model? If I'm not going to retire, why do I save?
You save because you have a okay. You save. Saving determines your consumption path, essentially.
Can't I just consume my earnings every period?
Yeah, you can. Exactly, you can. But then what you would have, say, without. Any growth, you could decide, okay, I just consume what I have, my wage every period, right?
Yep,
but then you can say, okay. but then you can say, okay, well, maybe I just save something here,
right?
And then my consumption path over time. At the beginning, I start with lower consumption, right?
Yep.
But then my consumption goes like that. It's a bit steep now, but something like this, and then in total, I have a higher level of consumption. Say I'm dying here.
Well,
this integral would be higher than this, and then which path I'm going to take is that depends on the time preference, right, and the risk aversion.
So you must be building something in about the time preference, whereby the time preference is bigger than or smaller than the interest rate. Is that
exactly? That's in every. So if the if we want to go Greek for a second, would be this is the time preference rate, this is the interest rate, and this is the risk aversion into.
Right. Yeah. The other way to do this would be to just go back to the original Tobin setup or the Diamond setup, where people retire. Or have decreasing productivity over the lifetime, so that, I mean,
but even
I think that's
the
only way to generate
model,
realistic time pass, or, Ron's work.
Yeah, but I think even in the two-period diamondology, and they work in both periods, you can have people save, because you just trade off, okay, how important is consumption for me today versus tomorrow, and what do I get for it? I get an interest rate if I save, right? So maybe I just say, well, just forgo a bit consumption today, I get an interest rate, tomorrow I get more than this one unit of consumption that I forgo, and that's the underlying thing. And saving would be much higher, of course, if they had a retirement.
Okay.
I agree. So that would make a quantitative impact here. And the exactly, and then we have the capital intensity, which increases by the higher capital stock, which means that my other factors of production get more productive, and this makes the interest rate increase. And what we call our basic model is the one where these three effects on the interest rate cancel out. So here the interest rate is constant in the basic model, and in the generalized version, which I'm going to show you later, we're going to have a parameter here on the spillover effect where we vary the spillover effect and see what comes out then.
One more quick question about consumers. What's the form of their expectations? Their perfect expectations?
Yeah, rational perfect
expectations. And are you doing, you're not worried about transitions?
That's a point here in this setup. It's all set up that they basically know how the economy goes, right? And from a technical point, it'll be that each person here, when R is constant, will have a certain share that they forgo for healthcare consumption. So we basically jump at a steady state. But if the technology changes, we're going out of that because the population grows, right? People are living longer. I'd like to discuss this maybe at the end when we see more. Then we can exactly point down where it makes a difference and where it doesn't. I think I have to hurry on.
Well, we have about 8 minutes.
Oh, okay. I think this one is important to understand the basic mechanics here of the model. So what does healthcare do to growth then? It's basically the trade-off between taking labor out of, growth in consumption, good production. Taking labor out of consumption, good production is a negative part of healthcare because I have these doctors that don't do anything to production of the material good. On the other hand, we're having higher capital, which increases the growth rate. And this is a trade-off that we're juggling around with in essentially. So the growth rate here increases if mortality declines, and also the fertility declines because fertility dilutes capital. But I think I'm going to go a bit quicker. What we have here is that that's just a central result that if the healthcare technology improves either by decreasing the baseline mortality or increasing the productivity of healthcare expenditures. In both cases, in our basic setup, healthcare expenditures increase, and so people are living longer in expectation, and the growth rate increases here. And the healthcare spending that's triggered by the healthcare productivity increase is greater for the same period of lifetime, expected lifetime increase, than if I would achieve this expected lifetime increase with a baseline mortality decline. So that means essentially that welfare, and that's what we're going to see, welfare becomes welfare from these technology improvements is higher than in the case of baseline mortality declines relative to an increase in the productivity of health spending. And this works through a direct effect, right? So suppose I've employed some doctors and they all get more productive, then I have direct effect because the doctors that I have already are more productive, I'm because of that, and an indirect effect, because they're more productive, maybe I want to hire another one. Okay, and then I want to come to get kind of like a feel for what we're talking about here, if we put in some numbers into that model that seem reasonable. So what I want to do here is I want to make a welfare comparison. and we'll consider two islands, basically. So we have an individual is an island one, they have healthcare technology one. That leads to, in equilibrium, healthcare spending H1 and a mortality rate P1 and a growth rate T1. And in island two, it's basically the same thing. It's just that we have a different healthcare technology that then leads endogenously to different healthcare spending and expected lifetimes. And they're going to ask, okay, how much more consumption at each instant of time that these persons are alive here, how much more consumption would I have to give this individual on island one to make this guy as well off as the guy on island two? That's basically corresponds to Becker's hypothetical life cycle individual, in essence. And then, so out of our analysis, we have a direct welfare effect from a longer life, but also the indirect effect, because people are living longer and saving more, so that's the growth effect of longevity. And we want to split this welfare, the total welfare effect, into these two contributions. So that's what we can do with our model. And an illustration here, so if we increase the medical treatment productivity factor, and we increase it such that with endogenous healthcare spending of the people, expected lifetime, that is the large T here, increases by 5 years. So for example, here if we increase this factor psi from 1.19% to 1.25, then healthcare expenditures go up from 27% or 28% of the wage to 33%. This guy's living, so here would be the individual on island one living 75 years. This would be the individual on island two, 80 years expected lifetime with a better healthcare technology. And then the question would be, okay, how much more consumption would we have to give this guy on the 75 years island to be as well off as the one with the better healthcare technology? And the difference here is only the productivity factor of healthcare spending. And then we see that the total increase would be here in this basic example just 2.15%, and the growth effect would be just a very little fraction of this. So just 0.11%, so very little here in this baseline setup. And the direct welfare effect would be around, would be most of it, so this spreading out consumption to get rid of diminishing returns. If we make the same exercise for the baseline mortality with the same parameter values, and we have the productivity such that they don't want to spend anything on healthcare in equilibrium, just to have the biggest possible contrast to the previous numbers, and also to refer to models that have longevity in exogenous. So here no one spends in equilibrium, that would correspond to the exogenous longevity increases. Then we see we got here a 10% increase in overall lifetime, so around five times as much welfare difference between the guy on island one and island two with a longer lifetime. And growth effect, again, very small. Most of it is direct welfare effect. So here, the increase in these different productivity parameters really makes a difference. And now we can ask, okay, so what can we say then for the numbers that we have, like in the real world in the US? So we have the guy on island one would be the one under the conditions of 1960. That's like he gets an expectation 69 years old, versus the other one on island two, that would be the one under conditions of 2077 in expectation of age that he dies. And then we have the average growth rate, and we recalibrate our model such that, so we plug in the real healthcare spending numbers, augmented by, so we cut them in half because we thought not all healthcare expenditures would prolong life, but just that it would be healthier. So, and then we calibrated our model such that the growth rates that would come out on average would be the real growth rate that we observed during this time. So here again, as I said, the growth effect is relatively small, and we would have, if we plug in these numbers, say 5%, 5.6% increase in welfare, the largest part again from the direct welfare versus the growth effect. And I think since I'm running out of time, I'm going to skip the comparison to South Asia here. Just say something to, I think I said something to this externality. So the externality here would be with respect to the growth rate. So the growth rate basically determines the path of the wages that a household faces. And this depends on the aggregate capital stock, which cannot be influenced by a single household because he's so small. If he could, then he would invest more in healthcare because he takes into account that the growth rate affects his wealth. So here we would have underinvestment in healthcare, and this is a well-known effect that gives overinvestment in healthcare. So which one's the dominant force? And it depends on the time horizon that we take. So in the short run, it turns out that, well, let's put it another way. There is, with respect to the growth externality, there is an effect on later generations. It's not just that I could improve my own welfare if we all considered that, but if the growth rate were higher, then generations that are not born today, but late in the future, they're starting with a higher wage relative to if we had this smaller growth rate. And this additional effect makes it such that the welfare losses, if I don't consider the growth rate into if the growth rate is lower because of this externality, this welfare loss increases over time the more generations I consider. And this is why the growth effect dominates here, and we can say, okay, investment is not for this reason too high, but it may be too low. We have too little investment in healthcare because the effect on the growth rate is not considered by the individual households.
Okay, I think we're going to need to
finish. Just maybe one sentence,
okay.
One minute. So if we generalize the model, we generalize the spillover effect, we vary the spillover effect by this parameter eta, and eta equal 1 is the old model. So basically we're just playing a bit with the trade-off field. We're lowering this force and this one stays constant. Then we see that if we lower eta and use the same numbers for North America with respect to healthcare spending, then the growth effect is here much higher between these two guys on the 1960 island and the 2000 island. And so since we're taking the spillover effect is not as large anymore, so the taking out of productive labor becomes tougher on the growth rate. That's why the growth rate declines stronger, and then we may have negative growth effects and substantial ones. Whereas here, this is a direct effect from the longevity increase, and it might even outweigh the. In total, might even outweigh the direct effect. So that's where we want to point out that the setup here is important, and then we might have a change in the externality result, as I pointed out earlier. And maybe just two implications of this whole exercise. So one is, of course, if the welfare effects depend on the type of the technology improvements, then the question is, okay, what are the prospects for increased longevity in the developed world, where we mostly rely on big medicine relative to simple kind of behavioral changes like washing hands and maybe smoking is one point. But also with respect to new and generalized welfare measures, where people want to include longevity into a bigger picture, so GDP plus longevity, that's perfectly fine, but we want to point at the interaction between the two. So if I want to give policy advice and say, okay, well, great, longevity has increased so much, well, GDP is lacking a bit, so why don't we just increase GDP? Might be, well, the interpretation is it's not so clear whether this welfare that we see in these data on longevity has not have either a greater effect through the growth effect or even a smaller effect because of these repercussions. Thank you very much for your attention.
Well, let's take a moment and see if there are further questions.
Yeah.
To create this simple model, you have many heroic assumptions.
Yeah.
The art of model building suggests that only if you can test your model can you distinguish a good model from a bad model.
Exactly.
I don't see how this is testable, given all your heroic assumptions. Don't you have to relax some of them?
Yeah, I agree. In a sense, that's a good question. I mean, there are like these empirical papers where Atsumoku, for example, wanted to get a handle on the effect of longevity on growth, right? Things like that. So here, basically, the question would be here, for example, that's what I pointed out here, which specification applies, right? I want to know. I mean, that really makes a difference. And I mean, our model would say, okay, you should test whether the healthcare expenditures have an effect on the interest rate or not. If it doesn't, then we're in the basic specification. If it does, then we're here, right? So there are kind of like testable predictions you would have to control for retirement age,
yeah.
All that stuff. That's true. I agree. But
I guess my working question should be, which direction will you take the model now on all those other things that have
exactly.
To away?
So that's like the future research slide that I didn't show you yet. So, yeah, I mean, there are many, many things. I mean, you pointed out this one here, retirement choices of households, and also fertility choices are important. So that would be interesting to put in. Also, age-specific survival rates that are exogenously given would be very interesting to consider. Transitional dynamics that was pointed out here. And what we actually thought of is extending the framework to endogenize the healthcare technology. I mean, that in our model is an exogenous variation, right? And of course, it would be great to like get some empirical evidence on this, but I think it's a difficult task. I fully agree, but nevertheless, I mean, I think from a more applied perspective, I'm not sure if this model. Maybe this one testable prediction, but. I think it might just be, that's what we thought, be a core model that might be extended as a simulation model, right? Just put it in stuff. I mean, for example, David Weil has done things like that. Not in a growth model, but he was like considering the effects of health on I think GDP, and he was like taking all these micro estimates and things and put it in, and I think that would be maybe a future direction of this model as well, considering the different repercussions on the growth rate, because I don't think you, or yeah, it's hard to single these different channels out in a regression, right?
Thank you very much. Thank you. So those of us going out to lunch, let's meet up here.
Sorry for hurrying.
Or you
at the end.
Yeah,
I do. But it's a good discussion, so in this sense.
Yeah.